through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Hour number three, we're going to get you to Pete Carroll as soon as practice is done, probably in about 15 minutes or so. We'll hear from him on how day one went, if he had to whip anybody into shape. Rookies. Should be seen and not heard, right, Jake?
That's right, as Bobby likes to always yell. He likes to yell it as loud as he can. Rook!
He
Rook!
Does.
Hey, Rook, you do this, you do that. He is all about making the rookies earn it their first year.
So Bobby Wagner's the one that, like, I'm thinking of the movie Dazed and Confused, the Parker Posey character. Like, she's the mean girl.
I don't think
whipping. she's. You know who I'm talking about?
Bobby
Susie?
Wagner covering people with ketchup and mustard.
Exactly, like he's putting like, you know, flour on them and spraying them with water.
He's a bully.
See, there's a different level of hazing that goes on in NFL camps. Some veterans are downright awful, mean, horrible to the rookies. And then there's some that still like to give the rookies a hard time. And that's where Bobby is. Bobby's a guy who he is extremely nice to everybody, but he is going to give the rookies a hard time. He's going to make them carry his pads in after practice. He's going to make them do little things here or there. But for the most part, he's nothing compared to some of the stuff that I've seen players do to rookies. It's, oh man, it can get real bad.
He's a guy, Bobby Wagner's a guy that, like, if Ben Burkervin or Cody Barton or Jordan Brooks this year goes up and does a press conference with reporters, like, Wagner will stand there with the reporters and, like, stare at them or ask a question or, you know what I mean? Like, kind of like make sure that he's kind of like on top of his game. Like, okay, you know, answer the questions.
You know, it's interesting because we talk about, like, hazing's a serious thing. I doubt that goes on in the NFL to the extent that, like, you read about in the papers, like those stories you don't want to read about. But one great way, I guess this is a good way to ask this. Like, if you're a rookie, how do you play your way out of being dug at by a guy like Bobby Wagner? Like, if you're on the practice field and you go out there and you show what you got, is that the easiest way to get the veterans off your case?
Be DK Metcalf.
Yes. Well, it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, right.
I mean, but I think the other way is it's not just through your performance, because you're still going to give rookies the hard time. It's how they conduct themselves is really what brings on whether you get more punishment than another. It's do you act like a rookie when you get there? And, you know, DK Metcalf, I think, you know, was extremely mature, on time, professional, showing up early, you know, doing all the little things right. And so when you see some rookies being knuckleheads and doing rookie-like things, then, yeah, you're gonna give them a little harder of a time than others.
You know what I'd say to DK Metcalf if I saw him showing up early and I were a veteran?
Mm.
I'd be like, what, are you trying to make everybody look bad? Get out of here.
And then with his super deep voice, he'd be like, I don't care what you say. I can't. That's as deep as I can make my voice. His voice is so deep. It's so deep.
It is very deep. It is very deep.
It kind of like hurts that. My throat.
Hey, quickly, away from the Seahawks just for one second here. I'm reading this article from Mark Maskey of the Washington Post. He's a national NFL reporter. The NFL is considering rescheduling some of their games this season for Saturdays during the 2020 season if there is no college football being played this fall. Now, I don't know what they would do if there's some college football. Like, let's say the SEC and the Big 12 are playing. But I guess my question to you guys is, would you guys watch NFL on a Saturday? Or would you watch college football on a Saturday? Say, let's take the Seahawks out of it.
Wait, so if
say
we have to choose, involved. You mean? Or like?
Yeah, like if, I mean, maybe you flip back and forth, but like, what are you more interested in? Because some people, Saturday is just the day for college football. That's just the way it is. But many of those people are also huge NFL fans. For me, anytime NFL's on, I'm watching it. I don't care if it's Saturday or whatever. But I'm wondering, for a guy like Jake, who is a huge college football fan, what would you choose there?
Well, it's really tough because I actually feel myself leaning more towards the NFL game as I get older. And as I get older, you know, with college football, to me, I love it, but it's got to be a good matchup. There's oftentimes in college football where you just simply don't have a good matchup that week and one steamrolls the other. But for the NFL, anybody can win any given Sunday. And so to me, I think I would choose the NFL over college football unless you had a great, great matchup.
Yeah, there are some college football games that would take precedent. Like if it was, like you said, if all of a sudden you've got like, I mean, this wouldn't be happening. This would be like a playoff or something. But say it was like Alabama and Clemson, like a game that everyone's watching.
Yeah.
I'm watching that over, like, I don't know. I was going to say Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but no, I might choose the Bucs. Normally, though, I prefer NFL football, partly because it's just more useful and relevant for our jobs, but it's tempting. But yeah, I'd watch football pretty much anywhere. Like if you scheduled it, especially after all of this, after the pandemic of no sports, if you had a game at 6 a.m., I'd wake up at 6 a.m. to watch it.
You know, that would be, I feel like that would be the NFL overstepping its boundaries a little bit. Like college football or college sports are struggling enough right now just to figure out a way to get on the field. And you're telling me once they do, the imperial hand of the NFL is just going to come over and be like, ah, we now own Saturdays too.
There's no way they stick to it.
Well,
no.
Yes,
no.
I wouldn't put it past.
You're talking about the NFL. You're talking about the most popular sport in America right now, and you're telling me that they could get an opportunity to get more ratings, more viewership if they move some games to Saturday. You don't think they take advantage
of
it?
Can you logistically do that though? Could you logistically, over the course of a season, have more than a handful of Saturday games, or would you have to treat them like Thursday night football, where like each team gets maybe one? You can't have like games every Saturday and Sunday. You'd have too many awkward weeks for players.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to do that, but it's far easier to do it on Saturday than it is to do it Thursday. I mean, I think that the NFL, I think it's more of those things, we'll figure it out and we'll put it together, but can we make a lot of money off this? Yes? Okay, we're going to do it.
It's not unusual for the league to have, at the end of a season, like say mid-December, to have like one or two Saturday games or maybe 2 weeks with one or something like that, but if we're talking every single week, that would be a huge step in another direction that I don't think college football would necessarily want them to have. All right, we talked about success. What's it going to mean if they do have success this year? Why don't we each pick just right now before we go? We're going to go to break. Then we're going to try to come back with Pete Carroll. Why don't we pick one player each on the offense and defense? And let's leave Russell Wilson out of it. Let's do like Sauk says. Let's take his success for granted.
Let's pick one player who
brings the offense from where it is now up a notch, and who brings the defense where it is up a notch. And you know what? We should probably leave out Jamal Adams too, because that's going to be way too obvious. I'm going to go for offense. I'm going to go Will Dissly, because he's not really been part of it. I think DK Metcalf will elevate, but I think having Dissly there just makes it that much more confusing to defensive coordinators to game plan, and they don't really know about him yet. So, and then on the defense, I'm going to go with my man, Daryl Taylor. I think he's going to show you something this year. I think there's a reason why Pete was surprised that he fell to them at pick 42. Stacey?
On defense, I'm going to say the very obvious one, which is Jamal Adams.
You can't.
I know, but that's what I want to say. You said, but except for Russell Wilson.
But then I said, and Jamal Adams.
Oh, okay. I didn't hear that one. Fine. Then I'll say Shaquille Griffin. Someone in the secondary, I think, would be great.
Okay, I like that.
I almost said Jaren Reed, but I'm going to go secondary. And then on the offense, I want to say, can I choose like multiple offensive linemen? Can I say the offensive line?
Sure.
Okay,
just
the offensive line.
Okay. That's a good one, because offensive line, there's a whole group of people that they need to figure out if they can play and play at a high level. For me, I'm going to go offensively. Greg Olsen, Philip Dorsett, those two guys to me are huge X factors for this offense. Let's see. Defensively, I will say Quentin Dunbar and Jaron Reed. Jaron Reed has to be his 2018 version of himself, or at least close to that, for this defensive line to play well. And Quentin Dunbar, there's been a lot of craziness going on, obviously, with the offseason for him, but he's got to come in and show that he was worth this trade that they made for him. And if he does, guys, he has superstar cornerback potential. This is not just some piece. He could be a superstar piece potentially for this team.
All right, we're back in a minute with Pete Carroll, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
All right, practice has just wrapped up. We'll get you over to Pete Carroll as soon as he materializes. I'm sure he's out there once the horn sounded, giving everybody the big rah-rah speech after day one. That was great practice. Had terrific energy out there, man. See you tomorrow.
It's just like him.
Something like that.
So hyped and jacked to be out here.
Hyped and jacked! Yep. Pete in his long-sleeve white shirt with his khakis and white
He didn't have the white shirt today, but I've never seen him, maybe like twice ever in my life, have I seen him not with white pants.
You mean khaki? He usually wears khakis.
I'd say they're off-white.
Off, okay. They're not like the white disco
like an
pants
ecru
that I wear.
No. Okay.
You wear those?
That's what he's wearing right now.
Those. Okay.
All right, NFL headlines. We'll do a few of these before Pete gets up there. This one, now I don't know how often this goes on, but this comes out of the New York Post. Andrew Marchand is the media critic. Apparently, ESPN, they actually spoke with Sean McVay, the head coach of the Rams, the current one, about being a Monday Night Football analyst in the booth. They approached a current head coach to try to get him to abandon his job to come up and be in the booth. Now, again, I don't know how often that goes on. We've never seen a coach quit to do that. We've seen people leave the booth. I mean, John Gruden did that. But can you guys imagine? It's not like McVay is ancient. It's not like he's thinking about retirement. He's 34 years old. What do you think it would take to get an NFL head coach at that age who's having success like that to walk away from head coaching? What do you think, Stacey?
Man, a lot more than he's getting paid right now. Because he's walking away from coaching. I don't even think he would do it for that. I mean, 34 years old. Everything we've heard about Sean McVay is he's like any head coach you'd expect, like obsessed with the game, constantly just focused on, obviously, his team. And I would have a really hard time believing he'd be dissuaded from sticking with coaching. I think I wouldn't be shocked to hear it was like, oh, we approached Bruce Arians, who's what, like 67 or something. Oh, we approached Pete Carroll. I don't think they'd approach Pete Carroll, but him in the booth would be funny because every single thing would, like, it would start and then he'd go, actually, I have a story for you. And then he'd talk about like running into some guy that was like a coach of like Lawrence Taylor or something really crazy.
Now, it's really interesting with McVay because, one, McVay is a John Gruden disciple. So you're ESPN sitting there thinking, well, maybe we could recreate some of that magic, some of that same type of crazy, obsessive personality that would translate really well. Now, Sean McVay, I'd actually would love to watch a broadcast from him.
Me too.
In the future. But... That's crazy. How desperate is Monday Night Football and ESPN to try to approach Sean McVay now? And you have to remember, one of the reasons probably why they were thinking this was because Sean McVay alluded to the idea that he could see himself get burnt out being a head coach in the NFL because of how obsessive he is with his hours and his study and his preparation. So that's probably something Monday Night Football was sitting there going, oh, really? Okay, well, let's check in and see if that burnout has already happened if we offer a lucrative contract. I think McVay is going to be in the league for a long time, and I don't see him heading to the Monday Night Football booth anytime soon.
You know who the biggest loser in that situation would be?
Who?
My boy Jared Goff.
Oh, wow. Maybe they get Jared Goff in the booth, Tom.
Yes, he would.
The year is 2054.
Goff would probably shed a few tears. I know I would. If I was in Goff's position, I don't want Sean McVay going anywhere. Anywhere.
He needs Sean McVay like I need, I don't know, club soda or something like that.
You do love sparkling water. Yeah, that's you need the context for that.
Ugh, so gross.
So gross.
I don't know how you drink that stuff.
I support it,
Tom.
Oh,
it's good.
I only drink sparkling water.
It's good. All right, next story here. The Washington football team is electing to go forth this year without fans. Now, just to get you guys caught up, a number of teams have announced that they will not have fans in the stands this year. Other teams at this point are still sort of weighing their options, trying to figure out, do we go 10%, 20%, how do we decide that? But Washington announced that they're going to go without them. Now, with everything that's gone on around that team this offseason, from the scandal to changing the name, etc., do you think not having fans this year was a good idea anyway? Like, you know what? Let's just give our fans a break. They've been through enough this year. Let's not put them at, let's not force them to be in the stands to watch this team play this year. What do you think, Stacey?
I think it would have been really difficult to find a way to, I don't want to say encourage, something more strict than that, enforce, I guess, social distancing rules at your stadium when you've got even a fraction of the capacity of a stadium would still be like 10,000 people. How do you keep 10,000 people, which is like, what, a fifth of the size of CenturyLink, from
a sixth
of the size of CenturyLink, from like grouping together at any point? You know, there is no way to corral that many people.
It's extremely difficult and challenging, but on the flip side, you have Jerry Jones sitting there saying that they are, right? So you have the Washington football team, or as I like to call them, the Washington TBD. We'll figure out what they'll be in the future. The Dallas Cowboys, they're going to have fans in the stands. It'll be something to behold in terms of how many people they try to bring into the stadium initially. And part of the reason Jerry Jones is saying they're going to is because they feel like they have the proper, how did he phrase it? The proper air filtration in their stadium, natural air that comes into the stadium.
You know, so, air.
Probably an important thing, but it'll be something to see in terms of how many teams try to, you know, go forward with fans in the stands.
Do you guys think that there's any way for the folks that would normally go to CenturyLink and like tailgate? Do you think that there's any way to stop people from doing that around the stadium? Because just outside it, on that, I forget what street it is over there that has all the, you know, where people are cooking up burgers and what have you. Like, can they stop people from doing that?
I don't know. I really don't.
I'm sure. That's a great question. I'm not sure. I mean, I'm sure there might be a few people that try, but I would imagine that people are, I mean, don't ruin it, right? Don't ruin it for everybody else. Don't go out of your way to try and do something excessive and then have the NFL or that organization feel like, you know what, we just need to pull the plug on fans in the stands altogether, right? Don't ruin it for everybody else. Just take what they're giving you, and hopefully it can keep building more and more as the season progresses. That's obviously extremely positive outlook on the situation, but just don't shut it down from the beginning because you're making dumb choices.
I need to figure out a way to get HBO. I was especially interested in this year's just to watch them try to cover two different teams on Hard Knocks. And it aired last night. Head coach of the Chargers, Anthony Lynn, who's 51 years old, revealed that he had contracted the coronavirus. And, you know, 51, That's sort of in that middle group. He's not exactly young for this virus. He's definitely not older, though, either. He's not in his 70s or anything like that. So he did reveal that he got that. Did you watch it at all, Jake? I know Stacy did not.
I didn't get a chance to watch it either, which I'm really bummed out about. I'm in the same boat as you are, Tom. I need to figure out a way to get HBO. Obviously, I wouldn't love to pay for it just to watch Hard Knocks, but, you know, might have to.
Now, Lynn said that he didn't tell anybody that he had the virus. Are they are teams and players, coaches required to disclose that?
If you're in,
I would think that they would be.
Well, I mean, I would assume that they would be. I would assume that he told, like, essential personnel. I would think it would be, if someone was at an office, say you're someone that still goes into the office, or, like, imagine, like, a friend you're still seeing. If someone has it and doesn't say something, you are the worst. Like, the worst.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, the thing with Lynn, obviously why he did not disclose it, is for the simple fact that he wasn't around the team at that point in time. So there really wasn't a reason to make a big deal out of it, to notify. I mean, we've seen reports come out from different sources. Hey, so-and-so has COVID-19, you know, this, that, and the other. And I respect Anthony Lynn for saying, you know what, look, I'm going to quarantine. I'm going to, you know, do everything the right way. But I'm just not going to go out there and, you know, public announce that to the world when it's not a necessity at this point. But being around his team and telling him how real and how serious this is, I mean, it makes sense to reveal it at that time.
Looks like Pete Carroll's press conference has been pushed to 2:30, which technically is now.
That's exactly right now.
That's exactly
right. They don't need to
right
tell
now
us that. Just get to the podium. Jeez. We don't need an announcement to tell us that it's coming up like right this second, which, by the way, is still probably going to be late for. Sorry, I'm getting fired up. I'm getting heated here. All right, next story. This is what I was talking about with the Jets and the teammates in the locker room as far as it concerns Jamal Adams and how they may have felt. Jets running back Le'Veon Bell was not thrilled with the way Jamal Adams forced his way out of New York and ended up here in Seattle. He says, quote, "It kind of looks like he forced his way out. I was talking to him, and he was telling me he wasn't going to force his way out. I love playing with him. He's a great teammate. Just sometimes you don't like how people handle things." Now, Le'Veon Bell's an interesting person to be saying this, given the way he essentially forced his way out of Pittsburgh after holding out for that entire year, letting his teammates in Pittsburgh down. What do you think of these comments coming from Le'Veon Bell, Jake?
Yeah, I don't really care for him. I'll just say that. Like, there may be some truth to it, but, like, your point exactly, don't be hypocritical. I mean, you did the same exact thing to your teammates in Pittsburgh, and guess what? Your Pittsburgh Steelers former teammates don't have really nice things to say about you. So if there's anybody that should understand, it should be him. And I'm looking forward to Jamal Adams getting to play the Jets later on this season and being able to, you know, reunite with Le'Veon Bell on the field and see how that goes.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard because Le'Veon Bell, I think if you're a star and you're outgoing, whatever his production was last year, like, people are going to pay attention to everything you say. So what you say is going to make a headline even if you didn't go out and pursue it. That said, he, like, pretty publicly right after this happened got into, like, a little Twitter beef with Jamal Adams. And I don't know. I just feel like it's a bad look. Maybe we're so used to here in Seattle, like, a cardinal sin is talking about teammates, and that's something Pete Carroll always encourages. And I think universally that's accepted with sports. I mean, that's why it was so weird that Cleveland players were talking about the two pitchers that broke protocol and went out on the town. It was even weird to see that, even though it's something we would say. I don't know. I always think it's a bad look.
You guys buy that the Cowboys and Dak Prescott are honky-dory right now going forward? Everything's okay, even though he didn't get the new deal that he wanted? Because that's the messaging that's being sent out of Dallas right now. In fact, let's put it in this context, okay? If that situation were Russell Wilson and the Seahawks, Would we go forward as fans thinking that everything was okay between our quarterback and the team, even though he didn't get his new deal, Jake?
No, I don't think so. We would not be thinking that at all. And to make that exact point, Tom Wassel was ready to say that Russell Wilson was the next Clay Bennett of Seattle. Mike Salk, I was ready to do a show with the old Brock and Salk show with Mike because Brock was out. And Salk was ready to just absolutely lay into Russ and how this didn't work out and now this is going to fracture relationships and this and that. So to answer that question, no, this town would have been ablaze with how that relationship has deteriorated.
By the way, it was only the deadline that upset me on that, Jake. I thought Russell Wilson deliberately was not giving the Seahawks enough time to get that deal done so that he could force his way out of here. Just for anybody who doesn't remember that story.
He gave him
2 weeks.
You were buying the idea that he wanted to go to New York. The Colin Cowherd theory.
January of that year. I mean, they had plenty of time in that situation. Trying to spark action is more of what the conversation or the reasoning for that was.
All right, what are we doing? Do we have to go to break? I see you guys talking back and forth here on the thing.
Oh.
DJ, tell me what's going on.
Well, it says live stream coming soon, so that's a good start. Oh. So
we've got a couple more minutes here before we go to break. One thing I have to tell you, I saw someone texted in on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line that, hey, Jake, you have to talk about, this is the wrong guy. But I didn't mention the Dame Lillard Skip Bayless feud continuing. Did you guys see that on Twitter? I can't read his tweet, but as we already know, Dame had a fantastic, fantastic game. Dropped, I think, 61, which ties a career high for him to lead Portland past Dallas. So then, obviously, there's a video of him saying, "Put some respect on my name." I'm taking out an expletive on the court, which I think pretty cool. And then he gets back at Skip Bayless. I think Skip says, like, "Good game, Dame," or something. And he retweets it and says something I cannot repeat. But I laughed.
It was interesting that he went and dropped 61 right in the middle of that. Like, he was possessed out there.
Yeah. It's like, maybe Skip Bayless should do this. Portland fans are like, do this every time. Like, call him
He's
out
like
every
Michael
day.
Jordan. Like, yeah, exactly. He finds his enemy and then goes out and just, you know, takes it out on the game. A story that broke earlier, and it's not complete yet, but George Kittle and the 49ers are, quote, making progress on a long-term deal. The rumor is that he's going to get a six-year, $94.8 million contract extension. Now, without doing the quick math in my head, is that going to be like a tight end redefining the position?
Yeah, but I think it's because he should be paid like a wide receiver. I mean, he doesn't play like a tight end. You're asking him to lead your team in targets, in receptions, and yards, which he's done for the last two seasons. I mean, I think a comparison people make when they look at a game-changing tight end is Rob Gronkowski. I believe during the Patriots' Super Bowl winning years, during the years that Rob Gronkowski was a Pro Bowler, he only led the team in targets and receptions for one of those years. So even at his best, he was still kind of like a really, really, really great tight end. He was never just your top wide receiver. That's the kind of player that Kittle is with that.
All right, you know what? Let's take a break now. Let's take a break now. If Pete comes up, we'll get you to him in the middle of commercial. That way at the back end, we'll have enough time for just a little bit more of him. 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
This is what I get, Tom.
Yes. What do you mean?
I was trying to buy time before the Carroll presser, so I was like, this Dame Lillard tweet I forgot to read, and I forgot to double check that it's fake. So I do need to tell you guys that it's fake. I played myself, as DJ Khaled would say. But I was trying to get back to our timeline in a rush here. I blame this entirely on Pete Carroll. And for that, I will never forgive him, no matter how many white pants he wears past Labor Day, for which I commend him for breaking fashion rules.
We call that a teaching moment in the business, Stacey. A teaching moment. A mistake you'll never make again. I guarantee you that.
No, I'll do it again.
No, you won't.
No, fully guarantee I can.
Aye.
Watch me.
And look, we're just joking around with Pete Carroll. We don't really care. But on day one of practice here, Jake, what does he say? Is it that he's talking to the guys about, like, hey, look, this year is a lot different than every single year. We're dealing with something that we haven't had to in the past with COVID. I need you guys to be extra vigilant. You've probably already seen what's happened with what's going on with baseball, if you followed that at all. We want to be the team that really, you know, takes care of ourselves and doesn't get in any sort of needless trouble.
Yeah. You have to look at some of the organizations in the NFL to me that are going to be more successful than others. And why is that why will that happen? Is it based off of location and just where the hotspots are, or is it the organizations themselves and the players themselves really taking it seriously in the sense that they are not going and doing extracurricular activities? You know, Bobby Wagner throwing, you know, some slight shade at the Seattle nightlife, saying that there's not really a need or a reason for players to be going out and doing that here in Seattle. But I really truly believe that the motivating factor of it all will be the fact that everybody truly believes, especially on the Seahawks, that they believe that they are on a historic run, that they're ready to make a Super Bowl run. And when you're on a winning team that has those expectations, I think you have a easier chance to get guys to buy in.
You know, we're not the only media having this discussion about our team being in position to make a Super Bowl run. I feel like this year, maybe more so than others, there's a lot of teams, I mean, just in the NFC alone, that have a realistic shot to make a run to the Super Bowl, or at least to the conference championship. The AFC, same thing. But I mean, look around. The Eagles are always in it, regardless of whether or not Carson Wentz is there. The Dallas Cowboys, they led the league in offense last year. I mean, that may not be enough to get them to the conference championship, but they're not an easy win, certainly. I mean, Green Bay is usually good. Minnesota, a lot of people think that defense is going to be coming back. New Orleans, they're always great. All of a sudden, Tampa Bay, right? I mean, them as an X factor in the NFC with Tom Brady and all the weapons that they now have. I mean, they already had a pretty good defense. You look at them, I mean, they may be the favorite. All right, Pete Carroll coming up right now. Here we go.
When we did this, there was one guy that was too close to me for too long. Pearson. Yeah, he contaminated me. Okay, what's up? Ready to go? Hey, for us, this is it's an important first day. This is the first time we get everybody on the field at the same time, working together, helmets on, the whole thing. It starts to feel like football a little bit. Everybody's really anxious and excited and raring to go. Everybody, we all love this game so much, and we've been having to wait and forever. And so guys are thrilled to be out here working, and it was a great first day for us. And the build-up to it has worked quite well. You know, we've stuck right with the regimen of the ramp-up, and it seems like it's been okay for these guys. They're in pretty good shape, and they're ready to go. And so as we get to Friday is really the first full-speed practice for us. We'll see how that works and see how we recover from that. And if we get that done, then we're on our way.
What's the Chris Carson plan?
Chris has got some family stuff going on that he's had to take care of. Our hearts go out to Chris. He's going through some really big stuff with family members that he's looking after and taking care of. So he's fine and all that. This has nothing to do with Chris personally, physically or anything, but he has to do this while at this time right now. So I'm not sure how many more days it's going to be before he takes care of all that business, but they're trying to figure it all out, and it's back home too, so it's a ways away. So we got some stuff to work out, and we're in, you know, full support of what he's got to do to get this done.
There's a couple things that have happened.
How different, I guess, is the practice you're doing right now, the accommodations you have to make because of all of this, is it much different than your normal first practice would look like? Or?
It's a bit different. You know, it's a bit different. But however, we've been ramping up to this, you know, so it doesn't feel that far off. You know, we've been testing perfectly since we got here, got back together. So we have some confidence if we keep doing the same thing, we're okay. And so, you know, it's just there's one more day and then we're rolling and then camp officially starts. It seems like it's taken a long time to get to this. You know, we've been here for quite a while. So, but everybody's contributed really well and really happy about it. And again, I mentioned, you know, earlier that the work we did in the off season with all of the virtual learning that we did has really benefited us, because we're still in that mode now and our guys are doing quite well. And so we're well prepared for that. It's not like we're getting caught off guard there. And so we're able to take care of our guys, look after them, and still get our work done.
What have you been able to gather about KJ's progress coming off the shoulder surgery?
It's a marvelous return. He's raring to go. We anticipated that he could quite likely go on PUP. He cleared his physical flying colors. We'll still look after him, take care of him, but he's in great shape.
What's the timetable on Quentin Dunbar, his intake, and when do you expect him out on the field?
He's in town. He's here already going through the protocol. I think his day is Friday, the first time he can really be here. So until then, he's got to go through the, you know, log the days and the testing and all that and get his physical done. I think his physical is on Friday. So that's a marker. Once you get to that day, then you know, you're ready to re-enter.
Daryl Taylor, I know he went on the NFI and all that. Where is he in his progress from
all that? We got to see. He wasn't ready to go, and so we just got to – there's no damage to his knee. He just has to get back from the work that he's been doing. So I'm not sure how long it's going to take. He's done some treatments and things that take a week or so to take hold and all of that. Got good response from that so far. And I'm hoping like in another couple weeks that we will know that he's ready to get back in it and go. They're working with him right now, and he's dying to get back and all, but it's just not quite right. So we just got to take our time and make sure once he gets back, he's back for good.
Is that related to the injury he had last year, or is that different?
Yes. It is.
Hey, one more. Colby Parkinson, I guess.
I answered the first part of the question.
Okay.
It's still part of the recovery.
And one more on the Colby Parkinson.
He's doing great. He's ripping back here. He might have a chance here pretty quick to get back out. So he's making really good progress. His foot feels fine, and there seems to be no residual at all.
How did Rashad look when you got him in the building?
I haven't even seen him yet. No, he's going through the same protocols. He hasn't been here yet. I think he might be tomorrow or something like that. He's coming back. But it takes a series of days to log the test time and the breaks and all that to get through it. But we haven't seen him yet. But he's here.
You guys originally drafted him. He was listed as a wide receiver. Now he's listed as a tight end. Looks like he's just solely doing stuff at the tight end. Is that kind of where he's at now?
We drafted him to play tight end for us. Eddie had moved him, I don't know, last couple of years, and you know, he's obviously a really big wide receiver, and he's got all the skills of receiving skills, the movement in and out of his breaks. He got really good hands. He looks, you know, he's a really good prospect. So we're looking forward to his development. We're going to keep him right there, and he looks like he fits. You know, he's almost 250 right now, so he's plenty big enough.
Is there Sua, in fact, a false positive?
Yes.
Has this exceeded your expectations to go 2 weeks without?
Yeah. I you know, I just anticipated because everybody seemed to turn in a few here when they started up. You know, basketball and baseball did, and we made it through, and we've been very, very strict. But, you know, we consider we're working our own bubble, you know, and we understand the theory about that, and obviously it's worked really well for hoops. So in hockey as well. So we're just trying to stick with it, and our guys have to manage from, you know, a little more of a distance than just being locked up in a hotel. So, but our guys have been really strict about it. Leadership is really making a big deal to the younger guys, and so if we can keep carrying out, we'll be in good shape.
That's a great point there by Pete. I mean, he watches the the NBA and the NHL. They've got the whole league under a bubble, and basically what every NFL team has to do is create their own bubble and be accountable for themselves there. A couple of notes there. He talked about KJ Wright coming back nicely from shoulder surgery. Quentin Dunbar's in the protocol right now. He just got here. Colby Parkinson has a chance to get back because he had that foot injury. Chris Carson dealing with a big issue having to do with his family, not him personally. Hope everything's okay there. But which of those things jumps out to you guys as being particularly important on day one, Stacey?
I think, I don't know if you mentioned it just then, but I think Daryl Taylor is going to be a big one. It sounds like we already knew he was on the NFI list. I assumed he would come off it quite quickly, but it sounds like he'll be on there for at least a couple more weeks.
Yeah, Daryl Taylor is it for me as well. But it is funny because I don't even remember KJ Wright having shoulder surgery, even though it was announced, it was out there, but it happened early on in the offseason. So that was another hurdle. But great to hear that KJ's come back from that with no complications, that he looks great and ready to go. And obviously, we'll stay tuned to the rest of this press conference. But, we're excited to get back at it tomorrow and have some more information for everybody.
Yeah, I'm sure Pete Carroll will have plenty more to say as we go on here. Don't know what Bob, Dave, and Moore are going to do, if they're going to bring you any more.
There's news coming from this press conference, I'm sure, and Bob, Dave, and Moore. Don't go anywhere.
Yeah, don't go anywhere.
Don't go anywhere.
Stay right where you are. It's fine.
What else do you have to do?
We're back tomorrow. 710 ESPN Seattle.